All right, here we go. We are now starting Crash Course in Judaism, and I figure the first thing we have to deal with is the alphabet. Okay, so now we have five lines. What's the first line?
Regular.
Regular, what we call Ktav Ashuri. Okay, I'm going to come back to that. What's the second line?
Script.
The script of?
Torah.
How we have in the Torah. What's the third line?
Numerical.
The numerical, what we call? Gematria. What's the fourth line?
Rashi script.
Did Rashi write in Rashi script?
No.
Really?
Yes. Rashi did not write in Rashi script. Who discovered or invented Rashi script? The printer. Rashi was the first Jewish book printed in 1436. In 1436, we have the Gutenberg Bible. Okay, that was the first book printed. Okay, so that is Jewish, but it also has the New Testament in it. But the first totally Jewish book printed was Rashi on Chumash. And what we call a font, that's what the printer did. The printer said, look, I can't have next to the psukim Rashi be written the same exact script. So he changed the font, and he came up with what we call Rashi script. Rashi never saw this, because this was invented a few centuries after Rashi had already died. There's Rashi script. What is the fifth line?
Greek.
It's Greek to me. What is it? No.
Ancient Hebrew.
Ancient Hebrew, known as, we learned Gemara Megillah was in there.
What?
Ktav Ivri.
Oh,
Ktav Ivri. Okay. So now, here's what we need to know.
Hieroglyphics.
Okay, let's go to Gematria. What year is it now? Tav Shin.
Pei
Gimel for another couple of weeks.
Might be.
Look over here and tell me what year is Tav Shin Pei Gimel.
But there's no 577.
Oh, you're saying 577 what?
5783.
5783.
Yeah.
Okay, is that true? Look.
Great question. I think it was 1,000.
Okay. So first of all, Tav is what?
400.
And Shin is?
300.
And Pei is?
80.
And Gimel is?
3.
So that's only what?
783.
So sometimes you'll see written Hey with a little shmichik, and then Tav Shin Pei Gimel. Hey being the thousands. There's five thousands. Okay, but since, you know, most people were dealing with in the last 700 years we're talking about, so people just, okay, they just write them Tav Shin Pei Gimel, but just keep in mind, sometimes you'll see a Hey with a little like a, you know, apostrophe, and then Tav Shin Pei Gimel. Now, Gematria is even used in halacha. Give me 1 second. What is a stam nazir? How long is a nazir?
30 days.
30 days. Where do we learn it from? It says in the pasuk, nazir yihiyeh. What's the gematria of yihiyeh?
30.
Yud-heh, 30. Okay? So gematria comes up, okay, like I said, in that Mishnah, even the halacha. So that is gematria. What do you want to ask?
Why do we stop at 400? Why isn't there a letter for 500, 600, 700, 800?
Because the alphabet stopped. This alphabet stopped.
Why? I mean, touching is...
Okay, why is... I mean...
Make up to 1,000.
I mean, whatever would have stopped, you know what you would have asked me? Why isn't there more?
Correct.
Okay, and that's why.
But why
anyway, now, Ktav Ashuri versus Ktav Ivri.
It's just a weird number to stop it.
You can make any number within 1,000 within these numbers. You don't need more if you're not using 1,000.
Now, Ktav Ivri versus Ktav Ashuri. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Bet, that has a machlokas. What language, what font, what script the Torah was given in? There's a machlokas. It was given in line number 2 or line number 5. Right? Is it the script that we think is the proper script, the script that we have in the Torah? Or was it written the way that it has on line number 5, what we call Ktav Ivri? Now, either it was changed or renewed by Ezra. Okay? Everyone agrees that at the time of Ezra, we now have what we call Ktav Ashuri, this second line. Okay? Or even our first line, Ktav Ashuri. Okay? The question was, is that the way the Torah was originally written? Then it went into Ktav Ivri, then it came back. Or Ezra made up this language, which would be very, very strange to say that Ezra came and made up a new script, right? Why would it be crazy to say that Ezra made up a new script? Okay, first thing, we learned Megillah last year. Okay, in Megillah, what did it say? What letters miraculously stood in the Luchot? The Mem and the Samach. Okay. Now that only works. The mem and the samach, the mem being a box, the samach being a circle, miraculously stood in the luchot. Remember, because it's engraved through and through. So the middle stone of either the samach or the box from the mem miraculously stood. That only works if you have the mem sofit, that the sofit are on the bottom over here. Okay, the mem sofit, the way we have it today, what we call ktav ashuri, and the samach, the way that we have it. You look on the bottom there. The mem is this squiggly, weird line. Okay? And the samach is also some weird thing. It's not.
Doesn't, you know, Rashi comment on it?
What?
Doesn't Rashi comment
on it? Rashi does not comment on it that I know of. That's first thing. Second thing, the Gemara says that a Navi cannot be machadesh any new halacha. Certainly not a new script. Third, there's a Mishnah in Yadayim. Okay, but you didn't even know there's a Masechta called Yadayim. There's a Mishnah, Masechet Yadayim. Okay, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hey, that says a Sefer Torah written in Ketav Ivri isn't holy, isn't Metame Yadayim. It would be very strange to say that the Torah written in the script that God wrote it in isn't holy. Right? But this is one of the opinions in the Gemara there. And it's not as if the rabbi in the Gemara didn't know that Mishnah. Okay. Fourth, you've probably heard Shiurim on this. There's all sorts of secret ideas, mystical ideas, just based on the way the letters look. One of the more famous ones is in, we have the Aleph Bet book in the back there. One of the more famous ones is a Gemara in Shabbos that talks about the difference between Sheker and Emes. Okay, look at line two. Look at the shin, the kuf, and the resh. All of them stand on one foot. You see it? In the Ketav Ashuri. As opposed to Emet, which has 2 feet, the aleph, the mem's got a strong base, the tuf's got 2 feet, and it's strong. So the Gemara says, Sheker doesn't have, you know, like, balance a kid, it's gonna fall over. Sheker, it's like wobbling on 1 foot. Emes has got struck. Now that only works if what? The Ketav is the Ketav Ashuri. So what's going on with this other opinion there in Sanhedrin? So the Ritva says as follows. Ritva says, of course the Torah, written by Moshe, and the Luchot. Of course the Torah, written by Moshe, and the Luchot, was written in Ketav Ashuri. Obviously, based on all the things that I said until now. But it was so holy, B'nai Yisrael copied it over into their script. What was their script? Ketav Ivri. Why would it be called Ketav Ivri? Because we are descendants of Avram. What was Avram called? Avram HaIvri. Why is it called the Ivri?
The other side
of the river. Avar HaNar. Right? So they were Ivrim. We refer to B'nai Yisrael, the Mitzrayim called them Ivrim. Right? So that was the Ketav that they had. And they wrote it down. They wrote it down in their Ketav. In fact, says the Ritva, that that's pshat in the Gemara, Nitna Torah li Yisrael, B'Ketav Ivri. Right? For Yisrael, it was in Ketav Ivri. They wrote it in Ketav Ivri. Because that was what they were familiar with. Right? It'll be today, if, I don't know, you heard someone give a shiur, and they said, I don't know, the word, Shabbos. And you wrote in English. Now it's a Hebrew word, right? But you wrote it in English. Right? Once, I thought about this, Rav Korn made a comment. Many years ago, my oldest daughter was like a little kid. She had a friend over. I said to her, you know, Tali, it's almost Shabbos. And she turned to her friend, she goes, Shabbos is Shabbat ba'anglit. Right? So, like, for her, that's what it obviously was. So, like, so let's say you hear Shabbos, and you think, right? Even now, if, I don't know, I say the word mamish, so you might think of that as M-A-M-A-S-A, something like that, and not mem shin. So they wrote it in Ktav Ivri. This is what the Ritva said. I'll get to you in 1 second, Baruch. This is the view of the Ritva. Good, yes, Baruch.
So in Megillah, when it's saying you can't beat, how far you can't beat, foreigner in his language when it talks.
Right now, they're talking about the script.
No, I'm saying so. If Rich, if Rim would be just other descendants of Aram.
Well, I'm not sure if they had a different language. Right now, we're using their script. Their script. Now, that was the view of the Ritva. The who is it? Radbaz has a different idea. He said that as long as we didn't have a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah, we are worthy of Ketav Asheri. What's Ketav Asheri? Again, the script that we're used to. Once we worship Avodah Zarah, it's too holy for us. It was too holy. Now, what happened in the time of Ezra? He was Mevatel. What's Mevatel?
Oh, canceled.
Canceled, nullified the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. Since there was no longer a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah, we were able to go back to Ketav Ashuri. This also explains, there's a Gemara Yerushalmi. I mentioned it when I was teaching Megillah last year, that says that not the Samach stood miraculously, but the Ayin stood miraculously on the Luchot. Now look at your Ketav Ivri line. Which letter would be miraculous? The Ayin, because the Ayin is what?
Yeah, but then also
the curved.
And Kof and
Resh. Well, the Tess has a marking going through it. And that's a way to keep the... What? The Dalet. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know about the Dalet. I remember it says Ayin. Maybe it says Dalet also. But it tells, I remember it saying the Ayin stood miraculously. Now, the Ayin is how we have a Samach. So what would the Radbaz say? The Radbaz says like this. What Luchot stood miraculously? The second Luchot. The second Luchot was after what Chet? Chet HaEgel. We did a Avodah Zarah. We no longer worthy. So according to the Radbaz, the first Luchot were written in which language? Ashuri. Which script? Asheri. But then after we sinned with Avodah Zarah, we were worthy of that anymore? No. So what do we get it in? Ketav Ivri. And that's why the Ayin stood miraculously, said the Radbaz. Now that it was nullified in the time of Ezra, we're worthy once again to go back to Ketav Asheri. Okay? Now, Ketav Asheri was, it doesn't mean it was Assyrian, right? We use Ashur as like Assyria, but it means like, I don't know, rich, happy, it's a beautiful language. I forgot what different ideas that I saw. Not rich with an ayin, but like Ashir, Ezu Ashir, Ashir Yoshev Yisach, means happy. So it's like a beautiful type of script. And this is the script according to them that the Torah was given in. That's what we have now. Okay. One last idea on this before we move on. Sefer Daniel. Sefer Daniel, Belshazzar sees a hand writing on the wall. Right? Anyone ever learned Sefer Daniel? Sees a hand writing on the wall. And no one could say what it means until Daniel comes in and tells him. Menei takalu. I forgot right now the last one, Parkin, I think. And it means that you're going down. Your kingdom's going to be destroyed. Okay? And that's what happens. Now, why can no one read it? Says the Radbaz. I'll tell you why. Because it was written in Ketav Asheri. And only certain scholars was passed down generation to generation knew what the original text was in. Everyone's used to just reading Ketav Ivri. Daniel was one of those scholars that knew Ketav Asheri. He was able to decipher the code on the wall. Okay. Any questions on the Aleph Bet before we move on? Okay. Moving on.
Can you just go over which ones of which line again?
So again, first line is just standard block Ketav Asheri. Second line is the way that it's written in the Torah. And I wanted this just so you could dafka see the shin and the resh, because like on our regular block, you don't see a shin like that. And even today, it depends on the Sefer Torah that you have. Those of you who are Bali Kriya, so you'll know, depending on the Sefer Torah you have, depending on the Sofer, the shin, I think, is like the Arizal has it like this. And depending on other, sometimes the shin is written like this, sometimes the shin is written actually flat on the bottom. The third line is obviously the Gematria. Fourth line is Rashi, which was not written by Rashi. The fifth line is the Ketav Ivri. And if you see the Manspach on the bottom, which you also should remember from Masech Megillah, if you look on the bottom line, the Ivri, they don't have anything special. The lines, they're Samach, Nun, Sadi, Pei, and Chaf are the exact same as their ones in the middle of the word. They don't really have any extra special things for the end of the word and the middle of the word. It's all the same for them. But this is the Aleph Bet. Okay, we're good? Hebrew. Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh. Why?
Language God uses.
Language that God uses. Okay, good. The Ramban says this. Okay, I'll give you a few ideas. Number one, Rashi. Rashi and Bereishis. Perek Bet. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Says the world was created in Hebrew. I mean, we have Sukkim saying, God said, right? Vayomer Elokim Yihior. Vayihior. Rashi says he didn't say that in English. He said that in Hebrew. Okay? So, the world was created in Hebrew. You see it again, Rashi, in Perek Yud Aleph. Says before Migdal Bavel, before the Tower of Bavel, everyone spoke one language. What was one language, says Rashi? Hebrew. Okay. According to the Ramban, why is the Lashon HaKodesh? That's the language God communicates to us. Okay? That's why it's Lashon HaKodesh. According to the Rambam, because there are no dirty words in Hebrew. There's no lewd connotations in Hebrew. Even, like, you know, right now we're learning Ksuvos. How do you say, you know, to have sex? Bia, which just means entering. Okay, there's no Hebrew words for sexual body parts. Okay, there are modern words, maybe, but not in, you know, the ancient Hebrew text, says the Rambam, because it's a holy language. Yes?
What about the Gemara that says we change the way stuff is written in the Torah so it doesn't sound as bad?
Right, but those words aren't themselves like, you know, lewd words, just like we want to make it not as harsh. Now, there probably still are, certainly were. No, I made copies. Okay? There are some Orthodox Jews who feel that Lashon HaKodesh is so holy that we can only use it for davening and for learning. And they speak Yiddish. Okay? I remember when I came here in the 70s. Luckily for my parents, they spoke some Yiddish. We went to some places like in Yerushalayim, especially Mea Sharim, and they wanted to buy things. And the person didn't speak English, and the person refused to speak Hebrew because it's Lashon HaKodesh. So like, my parents like spoke to them in Yiddish. I think they saw they were losing lots of business, so they learned whatever. But that's, Lashon HaKodesh is Lashon HaKodesh. Now, here's something that you might not know. The early colonists that came from the United Kingdom to settle the United States of America, these were religious people. And therefore, for them, Hebrew, as being the language of the Bible, was a mandatory course in university, and many valedictorian speeches in both Harvard and Yale were delivered in Hebrew. Okay? It was considered an essential language, an essential part of a gentleman's education. This is the language of the Bible, and non-Jewish people like Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were more fluent in Hebrew than you guys. Pretty scary. But this was a gentleman's language. Of course we spoke the language of the Bible. Yes?
I believe in Yale's logo.
Yale's logo, it says Urim V'Tumim. Yeah, it's hard to walk into the bathroom with that. Right. Now, even today, in the English vernacular, there is widespread usage of Hebrew words. For example, Amen, Hallelujah, Satan, Chutzpah, Kosher, and this you might not know, this is not from Hebrew, it's more from Aramaic, Abracadabra.
Yes.
Abracadabra means Avra Kedabra, I will create as I speak, right? I will say these, you know, incantation and then presto, change-o, you know, let the... So Abracadabra is Avra Kedabra. Okay, so this is Aramaic, fine. Now, the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayos on Perkei Avot refers to knowing Hebrew as a mitzvah. So it's a mitzvah. Okay? It says a mitzvah ketana, that's a mitzvah. Now, it's true that in many countries throughout Galut, Jews develop their own language. In Ashkenazi countries, what language do they develop?
Yiddish.
In Sephardi countries, what language? Anyone know what it's called?
Ladino.
Ladino, very good. The Ma'am Lo'ez that we have in the back was written in Ladino. Okay? Rav Aryeh Kaplan was such a genius that he didn't want to just translate from the Hebrew translation into English. He taught himself Ladino so he could then translate straight from Ladino into English. Okay, fine. But Ladino is like a Sephardi type of Yiddish. And even Jews became, I know he finds this shocking, fluent in their host country's language. Isn't that crazy? Jews went to another country and became fluent in their host country's language. Okay? We're doing the best we can. I'm trying to speak in English for you. But this is what happened. We lived in Chutz Laretz and we picked up the language. So much so that even in Bayit Sheni, Jews came back and they were, what language are they speaking? Aramaic. Is that a language they spoke in Bavel? You see, you look in the Mishnah, and it says we had three different stucco boxes where people came in to bring their meiser. One Mishnah says, one opinion in the Mishnah was, it said Aleph, Bet, and Gimel. The other said Alpha, Beta, Gamma. Those are the letters that they used. There's a Gemara that says that Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh Kedashim, and he heard an angel speak to him. Did we have this? Was this a Megillah? I forgot where it was. I forgot where it is. And the Malach spoke to him in Aramaic. There's the Kohen Gadol, and he was more fluent in Aramaic than he was in Hebrew. So in order to make sure that he understood the message, the Malach spoke to him in Aramaic. And he was the Kohen Gadol. Because in Bayit Sheni, that was the language. Now, it's true, the Mishnah is written in Hebrew. And even the Dead Sea Scrolls that we have is written in Hebrew. And the Dead Sea Scrolls go back to between 300 and 100 BCE. What? They're definitely legit. I mean, they're legitimate things. Are they? Is every single thing, like not everything there is just from Tanakh. There's some other scrolls there as well. But, yeah. Now, most important, we need to know Hebrew. We, Jews, need to know Hebrew so we can learn Torah. Right? The Gemara says, and we learned this last year, the day the Torah was translated into what language was it translated into? No, his name was Greek. Remember the Targum Shivim?
Yeah.
Right? That's what you said, Yevanit, sorry. It's a fasting. Okay? I think it's Chet Tevet. There are some people that fast. I think it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch. Why? Why is this considered such a terrible day?
Not they're making fun of the Torah.
Well, we have miracles that happen, but what's the problem?
Other people would understand.
Okay. I'll tell you...
Okay, that, educational book instead of a...
Okay, that's one thing, but I'll tell you two things that makes it a fast day. One, every translation is also an interpretation. Who says that's the correct interpretation? That's one. Two, we who learn Gemara, know that we make so many drasha based on how words are written. Oh, it's written without a yud, it's written with a vav. You know, why do you use this word instead of that word? Once you have it in translation, you miss out on all these ideas. So it's important to understand Hebrew. Now, the Hebrew language is different. It's written from right to left. Everyone know the famous line with Golda Meir and Henry Kissinger?
Yeah.
Right? I went and saw the movie when it came out. The premiere of Golda came out. My wife dragged me to see the premiere. Anyway. Yeah, no, it just came out now. I saw the premiere, whatever, like earlier in the summer. Henry Kissinger... represent the United States, Secretary of State, and he says to Golda Meir, Prime Minister of Israel, Golda, you should know, first, I am the Secretary of State. Second, I'm an American citizen. And only third, am I Jewish. And she says, that's okay. Here in Israel, we read from right to left. Okay? So, we read from right to left. That's first. But more than that, there are many prefixes and suffixes. Is that the word? When is a prefix I, right? Anyway, I'm assuming. Prefixes and suffixes. So, for example, you can have one Hebrew word, a very simple Hebrew word that we use all the time, and you need five English words to translate it. V'yotzi anu. What's v'yotzi anu? And he took us out. V'yotzi anu. It's one little word, but it's five English words. We have 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet without any vowels. And because of that, every word has multiple meanings. If you go and look up in your Morphix Translate on your phones, you will see, just type in Samach Pei Resh, and you'll have nine different translations. Nine translations. Samach Pei Resh could be book, count, barber, border, read out loud, cut hair, to be related about, to have one's hair cut, and narrative, all depending on what vowels you put. According to the Kuzari, this is proof they need Torah Shebal Peh. How in the world could anyone just take the Torah Shebal Peh and say, I understand what it says here? You can't even read that word properly. You even know what it says. You don't know how to pronounce it. Of course you need Torah Shabbat Peh to help you. Now, there's a modern miracle that occurred, and that is the revival of the Hebrew language as a spoken language. After close to 2,000 years of Gullus, it's really, really remarkable. This was only possible because Hebrew really never disappeared. Thanks to Tefillah, thanks to Talmud Torah, people were aware of Hebrew. It was part of their life. Then the Haskalah, the Enlightenment in the 19th century, revived the Hebrew in print and moved it from a liturgical language, language that's used just for prayer, to a literary language. And monthly periodicals were published by the Haskalah in Hebrew. And then weekly, the monthly first one is called HaShachar, weekly newspaper called HaMagid. These were published. We have authors like Chaim Nachman Bialik and Mendel and Mocher Sfarim. The street's named after Mishalayim, right near where I live. Mendel and Mocher Sfarim, obviously not his name, his last name is not bookseller. His name was Perlman. But anyway, they started to write novels in Hebrew. But the man responsible for turning Hebrew into a spoken language is who? Good. Eliezer ben Yehuda. Okay, Eliezer ben Yehuda. Mendel Mocher Sfarim is Yaakov Abramovich. Okay. Eliezer ben Yehuda, his last name was Perlman. Now, Eliezer ben Yehuda, he moves to Israel in 1881. And he felt a nation is defined by people, land, and language. And it wasn't really... Yeah? Yeah, it says... Right. So wasn't really crazy to turn Hebrew into the spoken language. Why? Because it was anyway in Israel the lingua franca. Does anyone know what that phrase means? What's lingua franca? Lingua franca means the shared communal language. Right? The joke is in Catamon, the only time you hear Hebrew is some American speaking to a French person. Right? Like, I don't speak French, he doesn't speak English, but we both sort of speak Hebrew. So that's what happened here in Israel. People came from so many different countries. So I can't speak to you in Moroccan, and you can't speak to me in Yiddish. So what was our lingua franca? It was Hebrew anyway. So this is what he did. He established the Academy of the Hebrew Language. He had to invent words that didn't exist. He wrote the first dictionary. How do you say dictionary in Hebrew? Milon. He made up that word. There was no such word. Obviously, you can understand. Milon is from the word mila, right? Word. So, there's the book of words. But he had to come up with all sorts of words. Now, what's interesting is he had been sick in Europe. And there was a Sephardi Jew who was next to him in the hospital. He had tuberculosis. Sephardi Jew from Yerushalayim who was next to him in the hospital. And he fell in love with his pronunciation of Hebrew. Unlike his Chabad Ashkenazi yeshivish background, and this became the Israeli pronunciation. Right? It wasn't the way he was brought up. He was a Chabadnik, right? But he said, wow, it's so beautiful the way the Hebrew language sounds when Sephardi speaks it. So that became like, you know, the de facto way that Israelis speak Hebrew, all because Eliezer ben Yehuda got sick and someone put him in the room next to some Sephardi Jerusalemite. And that's the way things, otherwise I'd be talking like a Chabadnik in Israel. Anyway, he married his wife on condition, right? What's the al-tanai? That we only speak to our child in Hebrew. That was the tanai that he made. In this house, the child will only hear Hebrew. There is a street right near where I live named after this kid. The street is called Itamar ben Avi, but Avi is Rosh Teva for Eliezer ben Yehuda. And it says underneath, it explains who the street is, the first person who grew up with Hebrew as his mother tongue. That was it. He once came home and he was upset. He heard his wife was singing him a lullaby in a different language. I forgot which language, where she was from. And he got so upset, he was like ready to divorce her. But like he grew up, this is it. He hears Hebrew. He started the first daily newspaper called Hatzvi. And it ran for 30 years, from 1884 to 1914. He was part of the early pioneers that had nationalist agenda, like Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion forced all Knesset members to all ministers, I think, to Hebraicize their names. Right? They had Hebraicized their names. So Ben-Gurion's name was Gruen. He became Ben-Gurion. I said to you before, Eliezer Ben-Yehuda was really Perlman. He became Ben-Yehuda. There's a woman that my wife and I were invited to her house for Shabbos. She's an elderly woman. And she said that when the state was being formed, her elementary school was near where, like, all the members from, like, the Knesset were, like, staying in a hotel nearby. It was, like, right around when the state was being formed, like, 48. And her teacher said, you should go in and wait and get autographs of these people. So these little kids are waiting in there, and they were getting autographs from Knesset members. And whenever Ben-Gurion came in, it was like a storm coming in. He's, like, rushed in, his entourage around him, back and forth. And, like, and then once he's, like, running in, he stops. And he turns around, what are you doing here? And the kids said, like, they're like really meek little second graders. And they go, like, we came to get autographs. He goes, all right, tomorrow, I'm too busy. And he runs out. The next day, he runs and he stops. And he remembers the kids. He turns around and he looks, and it turns out to her, because she was like tiny. You, come here. And she's like, you know, so timid. Says, what's your name? And she said her name, and her said her last name was Jackson. And he said, Jackson, go tell your father that's not a name for a Jew living in Israel. He should Hebraicize his name. So she goes, I went home and I told my father that Ben-Gurion said we should change our name. And she said, my father said, when you get married, to change your name. So not everyone bought into that, but this is what he did. And this explains chief rabbi in Israel now is David Lau. Before that, his father was Yisrael Meir Lau. Yisrael Meir Lau, survivor of the Holocaust, survived because his older brother carried him around there on a death march. His brother's name is Naftali Lavi. How do they have different last names? Because his brother served in the Knesset. And Ben-Gurion said, you can't be Lau. That's European. You have to take on a Jewish name. Lavi. Lavi, that's up. So that's why two brothers have the different last names. One is Lavi and one is Lau. They're both Lau at one point. But he Hebraicized his name. And I'll end with this crazy stat. Here it is. You had 100 different countries, people coming into Israel, speaking 80 different languages. And by 1948, 80% of the people interviewed gave Hebrew as their mother tongue. And that all goes back to Eliezer Ben-Yehuda. He changed. He revived the language. Today we take it as a given. Of course you go to Israel and speaks Hebrew. That was not the case, you know, when he came here 140 years ago. And it's and a language that had been dead. It would be like reviving, you know, Latin. That's what he did. It's a really remarkable thing. Lashon HaKodesh. We'll stop over here. Thank you very much. Shkoyach. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. The Jewish calendar, which is also very cool. Obviously, I'm going to explain to you about the non-Jewish calendar. We'll get into the Jewish calendar, but anyway, that's very good.